Hey, welcome to the VBAC Link. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We are truly so grateful for this community and all the support in listening to the show. Before we get started, I wanted to plug in another amazing show that you should go back and listen to if you haven't yet. It is episode 406, where co-founder of Needed, Julie, and I talk more about health, especially during our conception years. We talk more on choline and how important it is, yet how often it is being missed completely. In fact, most prenatal vitamins that you find in the store shelves contain either zero choline or barely any at all. And getting enough from food alone can be difficult. It would take at least 3 to 4 eggs a day to meet the adequate intake of choline. And new research is pointing to the fact that moms may need almost double that amount for optimal outcomes. In this episode, Julie mentions about 95% of moms are not meeting their choline needs. Choline supports babies' neural tube formation and cognitive development, and as well as mothers' healthy metabolism and mood. So getting enough is key. If you are among so many of us who are not getting enough, I highly suggest checking out Needed's Prenatal Choline. You can get 20% off your first order with code VBAC. That is VBAC at thisisneeded.com. Don't forget to go back after this episode and listen to 406 to learn even more information on choline. All right, let's dive in. Hello, everybody. You're going to be hearing a story from our friend Rachel today. Actually, a couple stories. She was on the podcast and we'll talk a little bit more about what number she is. So definitely check out the show notes today if you want to hear her first story before diving into these stories. She had a C-section and then a VBAC and shared those on episode 56. And then she is sharing her second and her third VBAC story today, with her second having a little bit more emphasis in detail of that journey. She had some plans change, and in place of our review today, I want to kind of talk about that. Sometimes we can plan everything to just down to like the final minute detail, and it's everything is going perfectly. We're really excited and we're feeling confident, and then plans change. And like Rachel, that is what happened. She was going from the midwifery route to unmedicated, potentially at a hospital, all these things. And then it just flipped. And she got a diagnosis of her baby that was unexpected and had to transfer to the hospital and had to transfer care and do all these things. And even the day of, she didn't have the person that she transferred to. And, you know, lots of things happened. And I think it's important to talk about like preparing for that change and preparing for the undesirable event. And we're going to give you some tips. It's kind of crazy. We talked a lot about things at the end. So I'm going to tell you a little bit now, but then if you want some more of this information, dive into the end. But we talked about some important tips to give to your birthing team, whether you have a doula or a friend or a loved one or someone who is with you and your partner, your birthing partner. Like really, really, really talk to them and communicate about these things that we're going to talk about. And also know that change happens. And so planning for change is necessary. It's okay to plan for one scenario, but then to have a backup plan. And I think it's okay to make that backup plan, know it, feel confident in it, and then kind of put it in a drawer and kind of put that aside, but at least have that there. So if plans change, you do have a place where you can feel confident in making decisions when plans change. And that might be going, you know, like Rachel, from out of hospital to midwifery route to unmedicated, no induction, stuff like that, to changing that up. Or it may be from going for a VBAC unmedicated to going for a VBAC with a epidural or getting induced. Or maybe it goes the CBAC route or it's a scheduled cesarean route. Plans change. And I think the more that we educate ourselves and the more that we prepare for different scenarios, the better our mental state can be after these births. So I want to encourage you to do that today. Check out the show notes today because we're going to have some links for some really great things. And enjoy Rachel's story because, you guys, it's a great story. And again, like I said, if you want to hear her first and second birth, check out episode 56. We're going to get into that intro and then turn the time over to Rachel.
Hi.
My name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. All right, Miss Rachel, welcome back to the show. You guys, right before we started recording, she actually reminded me. She's like, hey, just to let you know, I was on episode 56. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I actually do not even remember your story, which I feel so bad. But after over 400 episodes, it's hard to remember all of them. But I'm so excited that you are back on the show sharing your next birth story. So I'll turn the time over to you.
Yeah, thanks so much. So my first VBAC, like Megan mentioned, was episode 56. My first baby was a C-section after a scheduled induction, you know, like the whole big baby, like you're never going to be able to do this, the whole bit. And so I had my first VBAC in 2018. And this story that I'm about to share with y'all is my second VBAC from in November of 2020. So it was during COVID.
2 years later. Mm-hmm.
Yes, 2 years later, almost exactly 2 years later, actually. And yeah, so my name's Rachel. I'm a mom of four kids. I work from home full time for Series Chill. I'm the director of customer service. I homeschool my oldest two kiddos and hang out with my other two kiddos at home as well. I have four kids. I'm a pastor's wife. And yeah, I'm really glad to be here today. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Welcome back.
So my first birth, I was induced with a C-section. It was the whole, you know, big baby scare, episode 56 on the podcast. You can hear by, you know, a little bit backstory of my first C-section and my second birth. And then whenever I found out I was pregnant with my third, I really wanted to have a midwife. I had delivered my first VBAC naturally in the hospital. And while it was great and I was thankful for it, I really wanted a natural birth with my third, or not natural birth, but an out-of-hospital birth with my third. Natural as well, of course. But so I found a midwife and I was really excited. And at my anatomy sonogram, you know, the 20-week anatomy sonogram, I was at the sonographer's office and they're, you know, doing the scan. And since I had a midwife, I didn't have a doctor there doing my sonogram. It was just the sonographer. So she was doing the sonogram and like all of a sudden she got really quiet. And like, honestly, at the time, I didn't think anything of it. I was like, oh yeah, I'm just like, you know, gonna like hear how I'm for sure having a boy. He was my third boy. And, you know, I was like getting kind of excited, you know, and all that. And she got really quiet and I didn't think anything of it. I, you know, was like, oh, she grabbed the screen and she like looked. She was like, I'm sorry, one second. She's just like getting like quiet and serious, but she's trying to hide it because the sonographer without the doctor isn't supposed to say anything if something's wrong, you know? So I went home, thought everything was fine and normal. And then a couple weeks later, I got a call from my midwife and she was like, hey, Rachel, do you have time to talk for a second? And I'm like, that's never good. That's never a good sign. And so I was like, yeah. And she was like, well, so I'm looking at your sonography report right now. And it seems like your baby has a condition called gastroschisis. And I never heard of it before. I was like, wait a second. How do you spell that? Like, what is that? What are you talking about? And she was like, yeah, so gastroschisis is where your baby is going to be born with his intestines on the outside of him. And so unfortunately, like, I can't see you anymore. Like, you have to transfer to a doctor. You're going to need to find a surgeon. You're going to need to go to like a maternal fetal medicine doctor, you know, the whole thing. And I was like, what? I was like, just honestly, totally shocked. Like, it being my third baby and, having two healthy pregnancies before, I was just in total shock, honestly. And I was like telling my husband, he's like, well, maybe, it's wrong, and because, they're like, you never know. Maybe like he's like, maybe it's wrong. So the next step after that would be to go to a maternal fetal medicine doctor, an MFM, and have them do like their whole like sonogram workup. And so I think that's what I did first, is I made the appointment with a maternal fetal medicine doctor, and I asked my midwife for recommendations and was able to get in to see him. And I think at first it was like, one, I was like, yes, partly like shocked and heartbroken that like I knew that my baby was going to like have, difficulties after he was born. But another part of it was I, after like, being so invested and like working so hard for my first VBAC, I was like crushed a little bit. Like, what does this mean? Like, am I going to be able to, have like the labor and delivery that I want? I already knew like, I wasn't going to be able to deliver with the midwife, which was like kind of crushing in itself, but at the same time, still like wanting a healthy baby, And so, anyways, it was like a lot of mixed emotions. And so, at the maternal fetal medicine doctor, of course, I'm like, is he going to be okay? Like, what does this mean? All of that. And he basically explained that after he was born, so gastroschisis is where your intestine, like you have a hole next to your, the baby is born with a hole next to their belly button, and their intestines are on the outside of him. Sometimes it's other organs as well. It can be like the liver, the ovaries, if it's a girl, other internal organs. But in my situation with my son, it was just his intestines. So they monitor it throughout pregnancy with a lot of extra sonograms, and basically you don't want the bowels to become too inflamed because that's bad. And so I, asked the maternal medicine doctor, I was like, so what does this mean? Like, can I still deliver vaginally? Like, is it safe to do that? Like, obviously I wasn't going to, risk doing it if it wasn't safe. And he was like, yes, it's actually like safer and better for you to deliver vaginally. There's less risk involved in, with a C-section. He's like, you risk like nicking the intestines. It's better because their bowels, like as they go through, like we know, all the benefits of babies going through the birthing canal, but it's also really good for their intestines because it can help get rid of excess liquid and inflammation. And so he was like, yes, it's definitely like safe for you to have a vaginal birth. And I was like, well, I had a VBAC with my first. Like, do you think that's going to be, an issue? And he was like, I think as long as you can find a doctor that's okay with a VBAC, they should be okay with, a vaginal birth. And this is like my recommendation as well. So on I went to further my quest to try to find a supportive OBGYN. And I knew it was going to be tricky because the hospital that I had to deliver at, because it was a level 4 NICU, and it also is the hospital that had the surgeon that I needed to help my baby after he was born, wasn't the most friendly VBAC hospital. They have a really high C-section rate, and they say it's partly because, they take a lot of higher risk births anyways. So I was just like kind of bummed because my first VBAC doctor was incredible, but I couldn't use him because he didn't deliver at the hospital that I needed to deliver at.
Needed to, yeah.
And yeah, so it was a bummer, but I like did all the research, all the searching, like asking for advice on Facebook groups, looking for doctor reviews and all of that. And I was able to find a doctor that was supportive of VBACs and was going to like allow me to, at least attempt a vaginal delivery. So, the other thing about it that was a little bit annoying and just like sh added stress to the time was it was in 2020, so it was during COVID, and the NICU rules were really like touch and go then. We at first were thinking like all throughout my pregnancy that my husband was going to be able to be there. Like you could only have one parent at a time in the NICU, and so that was like just one other thing that like sucks, But I, just went throughout my pregnancy. I prayed a ton because I didn't want to be induced. It's like I had all like this whole list of things that, you think you want for your birth. Like I didn't want to deliver at a hospital. I didn't want to be induced. I didn't want like any of these interventions. And it's like, oh, well,
Total flip-flop.
yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's just like stuff happens and it's totally out of your control and you just have to go with it. And it was hard, but yeah, anyways. So, back funny story. My firstborn was born in no on November 9th. My second born, the story that I shared, my first VBAC was born on November 26th. And then with this baby, I was due on, I think I was due at the end of November. But the thing with gastroschisis babies is they need to be born. It's like very rare they go past 38 weeks because it can cause issues with their bowels. So it's like they won't really let you go past 38 weeks. And so I was like, great, now I'm probably gonna have to be induced, you know? So I was like praying the whole time I wouldn't have to be induced. And I also didn't want him to be born on my firstborn's birthday. So his birthday is November 9th. I was like, God, like just so many things, you know, you want to control it all and you just can't. But anyways, so lots of prayer. When was it? Around like 36, 37 weeks. I was teaching at the time and I actually was lucky because I got to work from home because of COVID. So you had to do like the COVID pre-screener because they didn't want you to like go to the hospital with COVID and people were getting false negatives and like all that stuff. And so anyways, I was having Braxton Hicks for a while and I was like, man, I feel like he could come any day, but I was like, man, I really don't want to be in the NICU with a baby while I have, my other son's, it was like his third or fourth birthday. I was like, that would be so like heartbreaking for me to have, a baby in the NICU and also like to have to miss his birthday while I'm recovering from birth and all of that. So I was like, please just like stay in until after his birthday, because then I'll have plenty of time to recover before my second born's birthday and all that little details that y'all probably don't care about. But anyways, so I was starting to feel like I was going to deliver any day. I was like, he is coming. And I was scheduled to be induced on like a couple days after my son's fourth birthday. And I woke up in the middle of the night with, this was a couple days before I was scheduled to be induced, right after my son's birthday. So he was born on November 9th, November 10th. In the middle of the night at 2 o'clock in the morning, I woke up with contractions. Crazy. And I was like, I kind of feel like this is for real. I'd started having contractions the night before, and we called, the in-laws, and it's like, hey, like it might be time. We don't know. So I went to bed, woke up at 2, and I was like, I think it's time. I took a bath, tried to relax. I didn't want to rush off to the hospital too quick. And like, I'm still trying to, my baby's being born with his intestines on the outside of him, but I still didn't want to like have all the stress and the unnecessary interventions and all of that. So I was like, I'm good. I'm gonna try to just like rest, figure it out. We were about 30 minutes from the hospital and it was in the middle of the night. So I'm like, no traffic. Took a bath. And then at that point, my contractions really started to pick up. And so we got to the hospital at 4:30 a.m. I wrote my entire birth story down like a couple hours after I delivered, so I have like all the details. Like I remembered it,
Great. That's awesome.
even though it was like 4 years ago. I'm so glad I did that. But anyways, so I made it to the hospital about 4:30 a.m. And on the way, I called and I was like, "Hey, like just so you know, like we're gonna need the NICU team. My baby's being born with gastroschisis." It's like this is my third natural birth. And I really think like it's coming. Like, just like, I need you to be prepared. I was like, I feel like I'm like probably 7, 8 centimeters dilated. She's like, yeah, sure you are. Sure you are, honey. And so I got to the hospital and they checked me. I was 8 centimeters dilated.
Wow.
And I was progressing really quickly. What's the term when you have really fast labors?
Precipitous.
Precipitous, yeah. I was like, I officially have this precipitous labors. And so I didn't want an epidural. I did. I was strep positive or whatever. So I
Group
did
B
have to
strep.
have, yes, group B strep positive. So I did have to have the antibiotics. I think I only got one round and they only got one round in me before I delivered. So got to the hospital about 4:30, was about 7 to 8 centimeters dilated, and I delivered him at 5:57 a.m., so just an hour and a half after I got to the hospital.
Oh.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It went so fast. And he had meconium fluid, like as after he was born, it like flew everywhere. It was like a scene. It was truly like a scene from Grey's Anatomy. I felt like I was like, wow, this is it. This is, and it's kind of funny too, because it was right before Halloween, and I was like, I do not want to do this on Halloween. Like this would be like the actual episode from Grey's Anatomy where a mom's delivering a baby with his intestines on the outside of him, and it's Halloween. But anyways, so another like backstory is my doctor, who was really supportive of VBAC, wasn't actually even there for my delivery.
Oh.
It was the on-call doctor, because it was in the middle of the night.
So fast.
Happened so fast. Yeah, she was like, couldn't make it. And so I was a little bit bummed, because the birth itself was hard. I mean, like, when it happens so fast like that, you're like, whoa, what just happened? And the doctor that was delivering me, like, we didn't have a relationship, and she was just really dry, like not really like connecting with me. And so after I delivered, she, hands him over to the NICU. And my husband tried to walk over to him to like see him, and he immediately had to be intubated because his heart rate was dropping. And so my stress levels are like going up. I'm like starting to really freak out. And they intubated him like right in front of me, which was, again, like I said, like the Grey's Anatomy moment where I'm like, it's terrifying,
Traumatizing.
traumatizing for sure, for sure. And so I then start hemorrhaging.
Oh,
And
you did.
and
You started hemorrhaging.
I started hemorrhaging, and they got my baby, his name's Elliot, they got him situated. My husband walked with him down to the NICU. And so at this point, I'm hemorrhaging. I don't know it yet, but I'm alone. Like, my husband's not there anymore. And I didn't have a doula. That was, if I had one regret with this birth, it was that I didn't have a doula. I don't know if they would have even been able to get in with COVID going on, but it was one of those times where, like, with my first VBAC, I didn't have a doula, and I didn't like go out of it saying like, man, I wish I would have, but like, because of just the delicate situation with this birth, I was like, I needed someone there,
Might have been
because
really nice.
I felt like I was going to die alone, honestly. And so I was freaking out, and I remember thinking like, why is it so hard for me to push the Pitocin out? I didn't have Pitocin. And with my first, I know it's like kind of debated, like, do you need Pitocin after you deliver? Do you not? And it was in that moment, I like had done my research on it and stuff, and I was like, why are you not giving me Pitocin? Like, why is it so hard for me to push my placenta out? And they weren't doing it. And I remember, I'm like, I asked the doctor, I was like, can, like, are you giving me Pitocin? Like, what's going on? Like, I've done this before. Like, this isn't my first like natural birth. Like, why is this so difficult? Why are you like, I was clotting, so she was like pulling on me, like trying to pull out all these clots. It was terrible. And I didn't have an epidural, which I don't regret, but at the same time, I was like, I'm like, why did I not have Pitocin? And some doctors do it as standard practice, like no matter what, like you getting Pitocin. But it wasn't standard for this doctor. I don't know if it was like there was so much going on, like maybe they forgot, but I was
Forgot that,
like,
yeah, because it is a pretty standard thing. Is it always needed? No, but like in this situation, like they should have been
absolutely.
acting on something and
Absolutely.
maybe even more than Pitocin.
Yeah. And so I was like, can I get some? And she's like, well, like, we don't do it all the time. And she's like, honestly,
What?
she was freaking out. Like, it was
I
not,
wonder if it's
I
like
think,
her mental
yeah.
like capability of thinking
Yes.
shut off because she was in panic.
Yes, yeah. And I mean, it was just a crazy situation. Like, I get it. It's not every day. Like, I don't know if she had ever delivered a gastroschisis baby before. Probably not. And so it's like that one first initial shock of like, wow, this baby is like, has
Different.
like different. Yeah. And so, yeah, I was like really mad, honestly, at the time. And I was like just thinking in my head, like, why am I not getting Pitocin? And like, I was also like, where's my husband? Like, I'm like, what is going on? And so I was just freaking out. It was really hard, but they eventually got me stable. My husband came back like right whenever I was fine. He's like, what's wrong? What's wrong? I'm like, oh, I just almost died. It's fine. And so anyways, I can laugh about it now because it was like 4 years ago, but then it was pretty scary. But anyways, he came back. they, were able to get Elliot stable in the NICU. He wore a silo for a week. So the surgeon tells you, and the MFM tells you, when you're pregnant, that they don't know when they're going to do the surgery after the baby's born. It really depends on how their intestines are, how inflamed they are. And so Elliot's were pretty inflamed whenever he was born. The defect was twice as bad as they had originally expected. And whenever I was having sonograms, they thought it was just his small intestines on the outside, but it was his small and large intestines on the
Oh,
outside of him.
wow.
So it was like a significant amount of bowel, I guess, as they say. And so he wore a silo, which is basically like they put your intestines up on top of your stomach. They stack them on top. So that way the fluid can go out and it makes them less inflamed before they put them back in you. And every day they push a little bit more in. So on when he was a week old, he had surgery. He had his closure surgery to close his intestines up. And he went home from the NICU after about a month. So he had a pretty, I think
Long
it's
stay.
normal stay for gastroschisis babies. It was hard with a lot of the unknowns because sometimes gastroschisis babies are in the hospital for a year after they're born with lots of complications. Sometimes it's like as they say, the fewest is amount is probably 2 weeks, but it really just depends. And so it was hard, wrapping my brain around when am I going to be able to take him home? How long is it going to be? And I think the one thing that I didn't realize would be so hard was not being able to hold him. It was like torture, moms just aren't meant to not be able to hold their babies. And I couldn't hold him until he had his closure surgery because, his bowels were exposed. But it was like one of those things where you plan and you plan and you plan and you try to mentally prepare yourself as much as you can. But when it comes and it's like, oh, you can't hold your baby, it's like, wow, this sucks, you know?
Hits hard, I'm sure.
Yeah. It was hard. But I am thankful that I was able to have a VBAC, it was very rewarding being able to walk myself up to the NICU afterwards and be able to be there, when he was just a few hours old, because the nurse was telling me, she's like, most moms can't even make it up here yet. Like after a birth, with a baby in a condition like yours, it's like they're, in bed or not able to move around. So I was just thankful and glad that I was able to get around and be able to drive right away, especially with him being in the NICU. It was great. And I was glad I got my baby back, but it was just one of those things where it's like nothing went as expected, but it all worked out in the end.
Taking a quick break to share more about digestive enzymes. For years, I have had digestive issues. I was told to take a digestive enzyme, and so I went on Amazon, checked out a few products with honestly great reviews, and quickly bought one. I figured they couldn't all be different, right? Well, similar to other supplements like prenatal vitamins, I have learned after starting Needed's digestive enzymes that they are not all alike. My belly has had issues for years, so I decided to get into the doctor and get down to the bottom of things. The doctor asked me to bring all my supplements in, and she wanted to review everything and told me to throw out some things. But when it came to anything that I brought from Needed supplements, she said, "Hold on to these and keep up with them." She was so direct. I said, "Okay." So I threw out the old digestive enzymes and continued taking Needed's. You guys, I really wish I could explain the difference I have experienced in taking these digestive enzymes versus the others. It's truly so cool to see. The bloat, digestive noise, my gas, yes, I'm talking about gas, has truly improved. I can't thank Needed enough for creating such a high quality digestive enzyme that helps me get radically better digestion. No matter what state of life you are in, you can likely benefit from taking digestive enzymes. Grab your bottle today and get 20% off with code VBAC. Visit thisisneeded.com and get 20% off with code VBAC. Okay, let's get back into today's show.
Yeah, and precipitous labor, I was going to mention too. We have seen, just in my own doula world and sharing stories too, hemorrhaging happening with precipitous labor. So that is something to be aware of if you're having a precipitous labor. You want to kind of be mindful of like what you're feeling, and down there, if you're like feeling excess amount of blood, like say something. If you're feeling funky, if you're feeling dizzy, lightheaded, ears ringing, anything like that, like it can happen after a precipitous birth like that. And so it's something to be mindful of. And there are things like Pitocin, Cytotec rectally, you know.
I never heard of that.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I always want to say it's Methrogen. There's something that they put in your leg where it's like a shot, and I don't know why I'm blinking, but they can give you some extra things to help stop the bleeding. Super weird. There's no research to it that I know of, but like putting a piece of cord in your mouth. It's really weird, but we've seen it happen. I did it with my own birth. That can, you know, nipple stimulation, anything to do to get that uterus to clamp down can help. So,
and I think it was even worse in my situation because I was so stressed. It's like,
you're like paying attention to what's going on over there with baby and your husband and what's going on. And then it's like, wait, something's not right. But like, and then you have potentially, I don't know who it was, maybe a hospitalist that's like overwhelmed, maybe saw a baby that they've never seen before come out.
Yeah. You know? And I felt like it's hard too when you're in these situations because it is traumatic. And a lot of times I think our birth workers aren't prepared to deal with they don't respond to it well, and it just makes it worse. You know, it's like, it's hard to say, and I think it's a hard reality, but I know I was watching something on Instagram the other day from Jen Hamilton, who was like breaking down birth trauma and like explaining it to moms. And it's like, that's what I needed, was somebody like talking me through it in my head. But it was just like, because of the situation where the nurse was, you know, probably freaking out too, because of like the situation and the meconium and the NICU team was running a little bit late. And because it just happened so fast, like I knew it was going to happen fast. And I tried to like say that, but like, they're like, yeah, sure, honey. Yeah.
Like, a little dismissive on that.
You don't get it. This has happened to me before. But in my prior birth, I did have Pitocin after I delivered, and it was, you know, not like that.
Yeah. Another tip I want to give to everybody, if you do have a doula or you have an extra person coming into your room, and like you said, like, yeah, it's a regret, but there, you don't know the circumstances. It may not have even been allowed anyway because COVID was really wonky. But a tip that if your doula doesn't already do this, we do this standard in our doula practice here in Utah. But one of the questions I ask as a doula is, how do you look when you're stressed? Like, how can I physically tell that you're not okay, that you're stressed and overwhelmed without you saying, hey, Megan, I'm really stressed right now. I need help. So if your doula doesn't ask that, that's okay. But tell them, say, this is something that I've recognized over the years. When I'm stressed, these are the things I do. You may say something, you may shut down, you may cry, you may go, you know, wide-eyed. I don't know what you do.
Maybe you say nothing.
You just freeze, you know? Yeah. So think about that. And then my next question is, okay, now that I know, and I ask the couple, I want to know how both of them look, how I can tell, right? How they would say that you could tell. And a lot of times they answer for each other. Like, oh, she does this and he does this. And then the next question is, okay, in the situation like that, what do you need to feel better, to calm down? Do you need information? Do you need a hug? Do you need a play-by-play? Do you need affirmation of you're going to be okay? And I know it feels really scary and like you're going to die right now, but you're not. You're in good hands. Things are going. Mm-hmm. It's getting under control, because sometimes we can see things, you know.
Yes. So yeah. Because when you're laying there and it's like, all I saw was my husband, you know, walk over to the baby and they're like pushing him away. And like, truly, I was just playing the scene from Grey's Anatomy where like, you know, spiraling. You go and you, yes, I was like spiraling completely. And it was another crazy story was my labor and delivery nurse happened to be the only nurse on the floor who had actually had a gastroschisis baby herself. It was crazy. She was like, what are even the chances? She didn't deliver vaginally though. she delivered via C-section because it was like 20 some years ago. She was like, they were not like, nobody knew back
Possible.
then, like what we know now. And yeah, it was crazy. And I think they also might have been like a little bit short-staffed from like from what we actually
Going
needed
on.
versus what was going on. So I think that nurse was actually helping my baby at first or like doing something else. But like I just remember all of a sudden she got into my face when I was freaking out. At first I was like praying for my baby like audibly whenever he was being intubated because I was freaking out, spiraling. All I could do was pray truly at that moment. And then it was like when I started hemorrhaging, then I just started getting mad. I'm like, are you giving me Pitocin? Why aren't you giving me Pitocin? Like, what is going on? Why are you grabbing me like this? Because like I said, every birth is different. You don't know like what you're going into. And all I had to compare it to was my prior VBAC where it was smooth. Like I didn't even finish and my placenta just came out and I was like, what is going on? I don't understand. And if somebody would have been like explaining like, hey, Rachel, you're hemorrhaging right now, but it's going to be okay. Like, this is what we're doing to try to like help the situation. The reason why we're pulling on you like this is because you're clotting. And so right now I'm trying to get the clots out and removed, but I had nothing. My husband wasn't there. And so it was just, it's frustrating. It's frustrating looking back on it because I'm like, this could have been prevented and I wouldn't have been as traumatized if, you know, I would have had the right support. But you live and you learn, you know?
Well, that it's hard, and it's hard to go back, and but you're but it's also easy to go back because you experienced that and you were there and you had those feelings. But yeah, I would say if you have a doula or you have a mom or a sister or an aunt or a cousin, or which are different than doulas in many ways, but if you have someone there, talk to them about that,
Whoever it is,
because we're not expecting anything to go awry or have those feelings. But if someone knows, okay, Rachel, this is what you need in this situation and can give that to you, even if it's not perfect, it's better than nothing, right?
Nothing. Yeah.
I had a dad that he literally told me, he's like, I'm going to fidget. I am going
Yeah.
to fidget if I am struggling. I'm spiraling and I'm spiraling fast and I fidget. And the faster I fidget, the more spiraled I am. And I started seeing that. And I walked over and I just sat down very softly, didn't touch him because wanted to respect his personal space. That was another thing. When he was upset, he doesn't want to be touched. That is just like really, and he told me that. And he just said, I need to know facts. I need to know actual facts of what is happening. And then I need to know what to expect next. And so I sat down and I talked to him about things and was like, this is going on. And he just looked at me, he welled up and was like, that's exactly what I needed. And I was like, thank you. So I really think it's like so powerful if we can, as doulas, as birth workers,
Communicate.
as midwives, as OBs, whoever, if you're listening and you are working with anyone having a baby, really communicate, but also when of strength, communicate what you need. Because you can't, you're not in that space then to say audibly, this is what I need. And so,
Yeah, that's a really good point. Whenever I had, so that was my third VBAC story that I just told you. But whenever I had my fourth, I actually told my husband the one thing I told him was if she was perfectly healthy, by the way, but I was like, if for whatever reason she goes to the NICU, you are not leaving me. Like, if she wants to go to the
need
NICU
you.
by herself, like, that's okay. She's not gonna remember it. I'm gonna remember it. So, like, just like had that expectation going in. He's like, okay, got it. And I mean, she was fine and she never left my side. And she, you know, we got skin to skin right away. But it was just a good, it made me feel better going into that birth, like that he knows like what I
You
need.
needed.
Yes. Yeah. Because if we wouldn't have had that conversation and if it would have happened again, he probably would have been like, okay, yeah, sure. Like, well, let's go with the baby. But I was like, might work for some people, but I need you next to me. So I
I'm
was
so glad
glad
that
that
you
we,
did that. I mean, I'm glad that it didn't end up happening, but again, if it did, like you knew. And so with your fourth feedback, I know we're running out of time, but with your fourth feedback, anything that you'd like to share to the listeners?
just like I think I put in my notes, like you just have to know every birth is different. And I went into my fourth VBAC with a lot more trauma than I think I was expecting. Like I, you know, had processed my last birth, but whenever it's just so hard to get it out of your head. Like, and that's, I ended up having a hospital birth with my fourth, despite hating hospitals, despite all the trauma that hospitals bring me, knowing this about myself, I was still like, well, like, I think I didn't want to be disappointed if it didn't go how I wanted it to. And I was honestly just scared. Like, I had, been through a lot before, so I felt like the hospital would make me feel more safe. But I think it turns out just really stressed me out. And my water, like, every birth is different. And so my water broke for like the first time ever with my fourth, and I didn't immediately start having contractions. And I was like, well, what is this? What's happening? Because I'm used to being, like the precipitous labors where my water breaks and then I like have a
Have a
baby
baby.
2 minutes later, and that didn't happen. And so I was like stressed out and I was mad, and it ended up working out great. Like, she was OP, and so I had a lot of back labor, and I think that's also part of the reason why I had prom, because she wasn't in the bestest position possible. Yeah, it was my only labor that I begged for an epidural, but my labor and delivery nurse actually happened to be my first labor and delivery nurse I ever had with my C-section baby. Crazy. She remembered us. She was like, oh my gosh, I remember you. And so she was really great. And she was like, no, it's too late for you to get an epidural. Sorry. But yeah, I still did del once contraction started with her. Crazy. I know we're running out of time, but I'll just say it really quick.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like seconds away from getting Pitocin, which, if you know how I already said, I did not want to be induced. Like, I didn't want Pitocin. That was like my whole thing with all of my births. I did not want Pitocin, but I was like starting to cut it close with my time of my water being broken. And they're like, well, you can't just sit here. So I was like, well, maybe I'll pump. So I pumped, and the doctor broke the, like, I think there was like a little bit left of my waters. He broke it. I pumped, and like a few minutes later, like, contractions started. And so I was like, phew, no
Yay.
Pitocin. I didn't have to have the like added risk and fear of having Pitocin. And she was, I think that was around 7 o'clock in the morning, and she was born a little bit after 11. So still a pretty fast labor, but
Yeah.
it was like mostly spent in the hospital, where with my last one, it was a little bit at home, a little bit in the car. But yeah, it was great. And she was cool because she was born with a cord, a knot in her cord.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. True
She had
not.
she was true knot, was OP, and the only labor and delivery that I begged for an epidural.
Did you give birth OP or did she rotate?
I'm pretty sure, was OP.
She was
Like,
OP.
when, yeah, whenever I gave birth, because the nurse, I was like talking to the nurse, and I was like, man, I've never had back labor like this before. I was like, what's going on? She was like, well, she might be OP. And I was like, honestly, I was thinking that same thing. And then it was nice because I didn't watch her being born, but the nurse told me after, she was like, you're right, mama, she was OP. And so it was like just nice to know. But I still hardly tore, and it was great.
You know, it's interesting. Two of your VBAC stories for sure are very high reasons for cesarean. Kind of weird to think about that. Like OP babies, that's one of the main reasons why cesareans happen because we're untrained in getting babies in a more ideal position. Or getting moms in a better position to give birth in an OP position. And then obviously, with a diagnosis like your third, like that's a very common reason. Even today, we're in 2025 and we're still having people say these things. So, yeah.
And I really just hope that this helps, other moms out there that might find themselves in a situation where maybe it's not gastroschisis, but maybe it's another birth condition where it's easy to let that fear tick in, and it's easy to let, like, oh, well, I just want, like, my baby to be safe, and I don't want to, like, cause any problems or cause any issues. It can be easy to say that to yourself when really, a lot of times it's still better to birth vaginally. Not all the time, but sometimes. And when it is, and when you can make it work, it's worth it.
Oh, well, thank you so much for coming back and sharing all these stories and filling, you know, this space with motivation and empowerment and positivity, really.
Yes.
Overall,
yeah.
Having it be a positive. I mean, even with you've got some things, you know, that less ideal things,
yeah.
and that stuck with you and carried through. And I think that's something also important to point out. We're usually all of us have something, you know, something was less ideal or something carried into the next pregnancy or the next birth or whatever. And then I love that you pointed out that, you know, it's all different. It's all different. And so I want to remind everybody of that. Every birth is different. And it's a reminder to not stop preparing and educating yourself just because you've had baby.
Yes, that's so good. I remember whenever I was delivering my fourth and I was like, I kind of hit this moment where I was freaking out. I was crying and I was like, I'm so sorry. I was like, my last birth was really stressful, you know? And it was like, I was in my own head and I knew I was, but I was able to talk that through with a nurse and she was like, that was in the past. She's like, this is a brand new birth. This is a brand new baby. She was like, I'm here for you. You're going to be okay. And I remember at one point when I was delivering my fourth, I was like really worried of what's it called? Like placenta abruption. Just because it's like when something rare happens to you, you get it in your head, like the what ifs, like the what ifs become even worse. Like gastroschisis babies are 1 out of 2,000. So it's really rare. But then you're like, well, what if something else rare happens to me? You know, like what if?
Like, well, I'm in that category.
Yes.
The rare category. So it might as well be everything. I think the same thing with uterine rupture. Like,
yes.
When you do have a uterine rupture, yes, the chances are very small. Like really, you know, less than 1%, slightly over 1%, depending on certain situations. Mm-hmm. But when it happens, you play this in your mind.
Yes. And I was so thankful that the nurse was like, no, honey, that's not what's happening right now. She's like, you're having back labor. That's what this is. You're having
back labor.
Maybe
it's just in a weird position.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was just, I was beyond thankful for her, like through that labor. And it was just really full circle that it was like my fourth. She was my baby girl too. I had three boys before I finally got my girl. And it was crazy too, because it was the same nurse I had when I had my C-section.
First.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy.
I love when that stuff happens. Like it's that full circle.
Yes,
we full talk circle. About it all
like,
the time.
Here we are again.
Yes.
Here we are again. Aww. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing these stories. You're just incredible. And I know so many women of strength are going to just love this story.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.